Welcome to the Prodigal and the Priest podcast, a podcast about faith, sports, and two friends from different cultures. Here are your hosts, Joey Scansella and Father Paul Bechter.
Well, hello, everybody. So excited to be here with y'all. Today, we are jumping into the second part of our series on tithing. But before we get to that, I want to give you a little update on our website. Maybe you've made it to our new website, prodigalandthepriest.com. There you can submit a question, you can send us an email, you can listen to our podcast on all major platforms. One little hiccup we experienced just because of our background in youth ministry and priesthood ministry. We are not IT people, but when we switched over to a new website, it may have temporarily gotten rid of our season 1 and 2 from the podcast platforms. So if you go to Apple, if you go to Spotify, any of those, you probably won't see season 1 or 2, but we will be re-releasing those. So the way you'll be able to distinguish between season 3 and those past ones, we'll put a re-release in brackets before the title of it, and all those will be able to be sorted by season 1, 2, and 3. So you'll be able to share all those past ones with family and friends that are asking about the sacraments or the Mass series or whichever one we did. But let's jump back into season 3, episode, what episode are we on? 3, on tithing. So last time we talked about tithing, the importance of tithing. I kind of set the stage by talking about a recent meeting I went to with very faithful men and talking about different aspects of where they give, how they give. We brought up First Chronicles 29, how everything is a gift from God. You even brought up 2 Corinthians, Father, and St. Paul talking about what a gift it is to build up our own community. Want to kind of start today before we dive into some practicals. Another really key verse. Want to go to Tobit chapter 4, verse 7 through 11. Do you want to read it or me?
Yeah, I got it.
Great.
Got a Bible right here, ready to go. Yeah, so Tobit chapter 4, verse 7 to 11 goes like this. Give alms from your possessions. Do not turn your face away from any of the poor so that God's face will not be turned away from you. Give in proportion to what you own. If you have great wealth, give alms out of your abundance. If you have but little, do not be afraid to give alms even of that little. You will be storing up a godly treasure for yourself against the day of adversity. For almsgiving delivers from death and keeps one from entering into darkness. Almsgiving is a worthy offering in the sight of the Most High for all who practice it. Okay. It's a pretty solid passage. Like as far as, reasons for almsgiving, I don't know how much more we have to argue than this passage from Tobit 4. And this, by the way, this is Tobit instructing his son Tobiah in the book of Tobit. If you've never read it, it's really beautiful, actually.
One of those books that we only find in a Catholic Bible, correct?
Yeah, because it's only in the Greek. Yeah, just a quick side point. Most Protestant Bibles will only have Old Testament books that were written originally in Hebrew. That's one of the dividing things. And if they include other books in the Old Testament, it'll be in a section maybe called like Apocrypha or something like that. But the Catholic Old Testament has more books in it because those books were canonical early on in the church, and there wasn't this distinction, which frankly came later, of only what's written in Hebrew can be canonical. Tobit was written in Greek, and so if you're looking for it in the original languages, you have to go to the Septuagint, which is the Old Testament in Greek, and not to like the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, which is the critical edition that most people would use in Hebrew. Okay. So anyway,
right. We jump from, yeah. When we jump into Tobit, I want to take it a little bit at certain pieces and get your opinion on it. We hear that first part that says, give in proportion to what you own. If you have great wealth, give alms out of your abundance. If you have little, do not be afraid to give alms, even of that little. I feel like this addresses what we were like hitting on last time. It's not so much like God is watching, is it 10%? But the aspect that some are called to give more, some aren't able to give as much. It's really the spirit of giving in what we are praying and discerning, right? Isn't that what we're hearing here? Is like, there are some who have great wealth that 10% is not a hardship. Mm-hmm. It's not a struggle. It's not a challenge. And I feel like here, like, it's pretty clear. It's saying like, hey, you need to give out of your abundance, right? Like you, and those who have little, like, do not be ashamed of the little that you're able to give. And like 9 being like, you'll be storing up godly treasure for yourself against the day of adversity, right? And I know ours are a little probably different translations there. I pulled up the USCCB when I was reading it here, just easier on the computer. But I don't know, just some thoughts on that. I feel like most people I encounter are struggling still with the idea of saying, just give me a number. Just give me a number. I'll do that number. Just give me a number. Instead of actually saying, I feel like this is very individual what the Lord is calling you to actually give out of, like, sacrificial giving.
Yeah. Yeah. That revisits our conversation from part one, right? A couple of the principles there. One of them is that it's, we do sometimes want the church to take like a moral decision that belongs to the virtue of prudence out of our hands. Because then we can't make a mistake, right? We could sort of obey or disobey, but we can't be in this gray area of like, I'm not sure what the best thing is to do, but I know I have to act. Like, having the church just give us a number would take that away, but that's not the role of the church. That's not what makes us spiritually mature, and have to grow up by kind of stepping into that tension a little bit. Yeah, Tobit, this passage here is really good for saying, like, whatever you have, like, you can give in a way that's pleasing to God. Whether you have a lot, if you have a lot, give out of that abundance. If you have a little, don't be ashamed even of the little. But I think there's another passage that, like, comes to mind for a lot of people who are used to hearing the Gospels, which is the passage of the widow's mite. Because it seems like Jesus says something different when it comes to giving out of your abundance, right? In the widow's mite, he says this, I tell you truly, this poor widow put in more than all the rest. She was the one who threw 2 coins into the temple treasury. I tell you, she put in more than all the rest, for those others have all made offerings from their surplus wealth or from their abundance. But she, from her poverty, has offered her whole livelihood. And so you could be like, well, I don't know. How do I interpret what Jesus says? It seems like Tobit is saying that I can give from my abundance. And Jesus is saying that's not as pleasing as what the widow does. Mm. And so I think it is important to bring that to bear right away on what Tobit's saying. I don't think Tobit is saying that, like, give in a way that you don't feel it. Give from your surplus wealth, from your abundance in that sense.
Right.
I think Tobit's just saying, if you have a lot, then you can give. If you have a little, then you can give. And it's not going beyond that in that verse that we read. And so I don't think it's contradictory just because it talks about giving from your abundance. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to move kind of to the next point, which is in Tobit, which I think has to do with like sacrificial giving and like where you're storing up for the future.
That's what I was going to ask you about next, because we get up to, you know, kind of 8 and 9. And I mean, And even goes into 10 of being like 9, you'll be storing up a godly treasure for yourself against the day of adversity. And 10 being like, for almsgiving delivers from death and keeps one from entering into darkness. I mean, that is powerful.
Yes. It's a really bold claim.
It is a bold claim. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that, because I would not say the average Catholic, or even those who I would say are trying to walk the path of discipleship and have a relationship with Jesus in the Catholic Church, would associate almsgiving with that. That it helps deliver them from death and keeps them from walking into darkness. But I can't see, like, I just see it as there's so much truth in it, right? Like, I mean, how many times does Jesus warn us about great wealth and holding us out of the kingdom of heaven and being focused on it and the greed and all of this, right? I don't know. You probably have some number. You're the Bible guy. How many times does he talk about money? Isn't it like the most talked about thing? Somebody said that in scripture.
I don't know. I never get into stats like that. I get over-focused on details.
But why don't we dive into that? What are your thoughts on this? What are kind of like different angles you got? Just kind of backing that up. Talking about storing wealth here and also that balance, because somebody's going to hear us and say, so I can't put in any to retirement, or I can't have any financial planning, or that. Is that what God is saying here?
Yeah, no, he's not. Like, that's a rhetorical question from Joey, right? Like, we're called to be good stewards of what we have, and that includes things like saving for retirement, that includes saving in such a way as to provide for our family. It also does include saving for the day of adversity, if you understand that as like a crisis in the family, right? What if there are medical bills that we have to pay? Like, it's part of being a good steward, and it also belongs to wisdom, to the virtue of wisdom, to like order things well in the light of eternal truths, which includes taking care of the ones that we've been entrusted with. So parents in a family, even in a sense, priest in a parish, right? So what is it saying? If it's not saying that like you can't store up anything, what is it saying here? What's the big point of it? And the point is like you can't put your trust in it in an absolute way. Only God can save. And so it's not that we don't store up material goods or wealth, but like we have to recognize how easy it is for us to put all of our trust in that and our security and to make of it a god, an idol. Here Tobit is saying that you will be storing up a treasure for yourself when you give alms. So when you get rid of your money in this charitable way, not just like setting it on fire, but like giving it to someone in need. When you do that, you are storing something that has more power to save than that money. I've heard of it as described as like taking out a loan before. Like say someone comes and asks you for money. And you say, yes, I will give this to you. They're basically asking you for a loan, but you know that they can't pay you back, that they're never going to be able to pay you back. And you give it knowing that this is something pleasing to God, and in a more important way, he pays you back. Maybe not with the money, but with something that's more precious. Whatever it is that's being stored up, this goodly treasure. I like to think of that as our increase in faith, that when we give, it requires our faith to grow, to trust that the Lord will take care of us right. When we give in a sacrificial way. Almsgiving, delivering from death, is a lot. And I mean, I've got the Greek of the Septuagint right here. It's not like a funny translation in the NAV. Like, it delivers ek thanatou. I'll pull it up right here so I can sound smart by reading it. It says this: dioti eleemosune. So eleemosune is almsgiving. It's the word that I talked about last time that means like charity or mercy. Eleemosune, kyrie eleison, Lord have mercy. Eleemosune is almsgiving. So it's dioti eleemosune. Oh, I lost my passage here. Ekthanatu ruetai kai uk ea es elten es toskotos. Like it's translated pretty well. Almsgiving will save, will deliver from death, will do something that I would think only God can do. So by giving alms, now like we've entered into this kind of salvific economy where God is actively saving.
Right. Do you think this brings up a little, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you'll enter into and prevent you from entering into the darkness. In my Bible right now, darkness is capitalized, which is really like ominous looking.
Mine is too.
But you don't see that in Greek because like the early manuscripts are all capital letters in Greek. And then the later printed editions are all lowercase. I'm intrigued as to why the translators capitalize darkness. I guess just to distinguish it from like, you're not going into like shady woods.
Right.
Or, you know, a room with the light turned off, but into like the darkness.
Right. I was going to say, isn't it more referencing the place of like hell? Ultimate darkness?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so. Eistos kotos in Greek, into the shadow, into the darkness.
Now, what do you think, though, about the fact that retirement, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, retirement really is not a biblical concept, but it's a cultural concept, right? I don't think we really hear, we see that like, God has a plan for you. Like, you know, he has I think of Psalm 139, God has a purpose in mind for each and every day we will live, things like that. Like, but the true idea of retirement is a cultural concept and not a biblical concept. So in all these things where he's saying like, do not store up, he's not really like, how should people take that in regards to retirement, right?
Yeah.
Did I baffle you on this question?
No, I've just never thought of like retirement.
I struggle with it personally.
The Bible, and I'm trying to think of like, I mean, in some sense, Tobias is retired because he's old and he can't see.
Right. But in that generation, wouldn't your family care for you? You live in generational homes, things like that, right? Like you.
Yeah.
It was very different living then. And part of me wonders, the whole reason I'm pointing that out, I'm just going to be transparent, is I wonder how much we've muddied up the water by like this current stage of like, I need to put this much in and my matching gift and my 403B and my 401K and this and that, where it's like, we are so busy and worried about something that may never come to fruition, even us being able to retire. Where I really wonder, like, what he was calling on in the scriptures. I mean, most of those people, I would say, you know, were tithing to the end of their lives and giving, you know, from the beginning to the end, and not just like being like, well, I need to plan for. I feel like as Americans, we are just always planning for that day of retirement, and it kind of makes me a little mad in the sense that, well, I probably never will retire as a youth minister, but secondary is
that's really where this is coming
no,
from.
No. But secondary is, I feel like we're kind of making justification for like just a cultural thing instead of a biblical thing, right? Like we're throwing out the idea of tithing and giving is not as important as it is to plan for your retirement, which I don't know if we explicitly hear that instruction. Am I making any sense with that question? I'm just trying to push into that and really challenge.
Yeah, it's a good question. It brings up, like, I don't know, in some sense, an even bigger question about the relationship of the scriptures to how we live in the modern world. And they they have to be our rule of life. Like, this is the inspired word of God that informs us. It gives shape to our lives and shape to our relationship with him and with others. And it does give clarity, but it's also not an instruction manual, in the sense of like it's not describing our situation in a concrete way. It's doing it through parables and through like application, of principles that are abstracted. So yeah, so retirement, like if I were to pick a gospel passage, I would think, what does Jesus tell us that bears most directly on how people approach retirement in the West or in the United States today? It would probably be like the story of the building of bigger barns, right?
Mm.
Luke 12. It's Luke 12, 16 and following. I called it the parable of the bigger barns, but here in my Bible, it's the parable of the rich fool, which is a little more judgy, but maybe there's something to it. So it goes like this. Then he told them a parable. There was a rich man whose land produced a bountiful harvest. He asked himself, "What shall I do? For I do not have space to store my harvest." And he said, "This is what I shall do. I shall tear down my barns and build larger ones. There I shall store all my grain and other goods. And I shall say to myself, now as for you, you have so many good things stored up for so many years. Rest, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool, this night your life will be demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, to whom will they belong? Thus will it be for the one who stores up treasure for himself, but is not rich in what matters to God." So like, yeah, I think it's important that we don't see that as like condemning storing up or retirement per se, but like, this is again, where is your treasure in your heart? Where do you put your security? If you have stores of material goods, like what hold do they have on your heart?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that gets into the question of retirement, because like asking, so we can't go back and live in the biblical world. I guess that's my point.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we have to live in the world that we're in.
Right.
And we're called to be in the world, but not of it. So how do we live the life of a disciple, but also like here? And if the structure's here, even things like generational households, where family will like take care of the elderly family, if those aren't available, like how do we live as a disciple in a different context?
Right.
And so I think the question that you're pushing into is really like, not do I save or do I not save for retirement, but like, how do I do that in a way that is wise? How do I do that well? And how do I do that in such a way that it doesn't take a place in my heart that should belong only to God?
Mm-hmm.
And push up the things that would make me rich in what matters to God.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. As far as like where people are on that, I've always been a little bit disconnected. We've joked about this a lot. And now that I work in a seminary, I'm super disconnected. Just don't have my finger on the pulse at all.
You don't have your finger on the pulse of retirement and, you know, what the current seminary things are.
There's that psalm that says, one day in your house is worth 1,000 elsewhere. And 1,000 years in the eyes of God is like a day or whatever. 1,000 years, it's like a day in your sight. There's something about seminary life where you just don't notice the passage of time. it's like this eternal now. And yeah, retirement's super far away from my mind. Also as a priest, it's just a different kind of thing. We are expected to save, by the way, because we live off of the tithe that the people of God give to the church, and off of alms ultimately. And so if we're not saving for some sort of retirement out of like active ministry when we get old and can only help in a more limited sense at a parish, for instance, if we're not saving for that, then we're not really being good stewards of what we're being given right now,
right?
To support us. And it would be more of a burden later. But yeah, I don't know. I think the call to live in the world, but not of it, strikes at the heart of some of this.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing in your question is specifically a challenge to those who care more or worry more about retirement than they do about things like almsgiving that the entire scriptures command of us, including the words of our Lord himself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that really is the challenge. And I think that's why we wanted to talk about it for, you know, an episode or two, is to encourage people to really be able to stop and take a hard look at this in their life. That was the biggest eye-opening moment from this meeting I was in, is I felt like a lot of people who I look up to in the faith said, and will continue, like, they were like, I need to pray about this more. And it was a call to action for me and my life and my family to say, oh, wow, if they are, and I respect them so much, I know I need to as well. And so, I don't know, moving into a few practicals of tithing, giving, you know, encouragement with that. I know I wrote down a few. I know you did as well. The first one I want to put, and I kind of think back to that, remember that like cooking telecommercial show thing? It was like, set it and forget it. You know what I mean? Did you have those in Bermuda growing up? It's like the, you know, not, like the Home Shopping Networks and those things. Did you get the Home Shopping Network in Bermuda?
I don't think so. If we did, I never watched it.
There you go. But there was some, I don't know, it was some cooking thing, and it was like, set it and forget it. That's what I wanted you to think of with giving and tithing in some regards, because...
Can you sing the jingle?
No,
Can you sing the jingle for us again? That'll really stick in our memories, I think.
I want people to try to give electronically. It's been a challenge to me, and it's been a challenge. I saw our giving change in my family. Just like Nikki and I's, when we actually went electronic, because it's so much easier. Oh, I forgot the check this week. Oh, I forgot the envelope. Oh, I forgot this. I forgot that. And then be like, oh, well, I'll double it up next week. Oh, I'll think this week. I see that recurring charge every Sunday hit the bank account, you know, for better, for worse. And, you know, like there's some beauty to it though, to be like, this is how much I feel I should be giving, and it's taking this much, you know, each week. And I would encourage people, unless you are so like just on top of it, like, no, I never forget my envelope. I am very diligent this, but I also feel like if you don't electronically set it, you easily justify, well, I took this friend out to lunch and they are looking for a job. And so that's kind of like an act of service here. You know, like people just justify left and right. And so to me, I'm like, we like to just set that amount and forget it. It's removed each week. And it's something that I feel like the Catholic Church could do a better job of. It was moving more into the age of technology, where so many places make it so easy to give online. We can need to continue to press into that.
I actually, no, it's an interesting perspective. I would have thought of it like an objection to it the other way, where it would be like, oh, it's just so distant and mechanical, and it's not really engaging kind of like this charitable impulse. There's no human contact if I use online giving. I would have thought of objections like that first, but actually I really like yours, where it's like, I, in some sense, if you give online, it makes a commitment that then you, it's harder to just bail on that on a given week if you're feeling like finances are tight or there's something unexpected, which always comes up, right? Yeah, it's there. I've always done the set it and forget it. Priests are expected to tithe. Seminarians are expected to tithe. And I've always done the set it and forget it method, and also for some charitable giving, which I'd include more as almsgiving, I guess. But that just seemed easier. And I guess, yeah, less able to forget. But that's probably just because I'm a millennial and I don't think of paper money hardly anymore. Right.
Not to digress, but yeah. It was the Ronco rotisserie and barbecue oven that literally I just typed in set it and forget it, and it was like the number one hit up. And it was like, and this is the first thing on like the video is like, set it and forget it, the greatest infomercial tagline ever. So I just want to you know, toss
yeah,
that
you
out.
Win.
Yeah, there you go. I know we both wrote down the second thing is pray, right? You need to be praying, and I would say discerning with those who are close with you within prayer, right? Mm-hmm. Taking it to the Lord and then taking a step to say, okay, who do you have that's holding you accountable to this, right? To say, is this okay to use? Is this, like, what do we think about this amount? Can we look at everything all together and say, you know, we're spending this much on Starbucks over here. What about, you know, all, but we're saying we can't give over here or do this, right? To be able to pray, to discern, to say to the Lord, hey, Lord, all I have is yours, but show me where I'm not being a good steward. Anything you want to add on praying?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Two things, I guess. St. Augustine says, like, love and then do what you will. That's one of these kind of classic sayings of St. Augustine. And what that means is, like, strive to give your whole life to God, pray, live a life according to the commandments, and then like trust your judgment after that. When it comes to these prudential decisions and when you're in something where you're like, I don't know if there is a right answer, like how much should I give? Like it starts with your relationship with the Lord, but he might not reveal a number to you in a time of prayer, and that's okay. That's not normally how this works anyway. Normally what it is I try and give my whole life to God. I make a morning offering and say, like, you know, Lord, everything I have is yours. Show me how I can glorify you throughout the day. Say things like that in prayer, like living in a richly sacramental and scriptural life. Like you're doing these things that we know help us draw deeper into friendship with God. And then you're trusting that the Holy Spirit is active in your life when you make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very different experience than like, the Lord hasn't shown me a number, so I guess I'm paralyzed.
Right.
Right. Like sometimes he wants us to use the reason that he's given us, but in accord with like it being formed in divine love. That's the first thing. I don't know if I remember the second thing I was going to say, but.
So you're just giving up on that. All right. Well, let's jump into the next point I wrote down. I'm sure.
Oh,
I'm,
yeah, yeah. I remember now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Welcome back, y'all. This is our great chemistry on this podcast. I know some groups of priests who hold each other accountable in a way very similar to what Joey said. And I've always thought it was really beautiful. That like for purchases that go over a certain amount or that involve certain things that they've labeled as non-essential, like they will go and consult each other first and say, look, I'm really thinking about getting a new iPad or about getting this, I don't know, kind of fun toy, getting a new like driver or something. It costs this much.
Not like driver.
No, but driver. No, not a driver, like a golf.
Golf driver. I was like just making sure people are not thinking that every priest is being driven around by somebody.
No, not at all. Or like some sweet climbing equipment that I don't really need, but right. like would be helpful. And so there's this gray area of, I don't know, it does seem like a good investment in some ways, but is it for right now? That's when like accountability with people that you trust and that you pray with can really, really be a life-giving thing and can turn this from like, should I buy this or should I give this much in almsgiving into and away from that question, but like through that into how does this bring me and others closer to God and glorify him? That's what happens when we bring others into the discussion, is that it starts to move us in that direction.
Yeah, that was actually the next point. So you hit it right on. I typed in accountability, and I agree with that 100%. I know a group of people that do that. I know both you and I, when we read The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, he talks about that in there. He has a community group that they openly talk about their finances, and they talk about, hey, what, who can hold you accountable to that, you know, a certain amount or certain thing. Like before you buy a new car, just to be like, I'm buying a new car. What's wrong with your current car? You know, like, yes, you have full decision and power making. They're not stripping that of that person, but they're saying, hey, let's process this together first. Right. Same. I try to do, with, purchases over a certain amount as well, is say to, I have a good friend and I say, hey, I'm thinking about getting this. What are your thoughts on this? Give me some feedback. You know, I think about the Blackstone, you know, griddle grill, you know, you know how I'm into the Blackstone, right? And so,
oh yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, I've eaten food you've made on it.
Right.
I support that purchase.
Support the purchase, right? And I've always been like, well, what if I had four burners? And the reality is, most of the time, week in, week out, I don't need four burners, right? Like this, one day when this one breaks, okay, we'll talk about four burners. But for right now, no, this does. Unless like, you know, like Nikki like got pregnant and had quadruplets or something like that, then we would need to invest in the next Blackstone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, maybe you should have two Blackstones.
Maybe you should. And then last but not least, I really want to encourage people to challenge themselves. I think this can be an area that there isn't a lot of accountability. You don't talk to a lot of people about. We're very private with our finances. And when we do that and it lives in that darkness, in that closed off area, I don't feel like it's
in the shadow from Tobit.
Yeah, in the shadow.
Skotos.
It's not exposed to any light. And like, I feel like the Lord wants to work in that, work in our hearts in that way, work in our lives in that way. And I just want to say for me with tithing, and the last point is to be challenged. I try to challenge myself whenever I can say, I can't support, you know, another missionary person, another, you know, few dollars to the church or whatever it is, that I really try to challenge and say, is that true, Joey? Okay. If it is, write out, show me these purchases, show me these things, because, you know, I think there is a beauty to being able to bless somebody else and bless the church. I know I've been personally a recipient of that, and it's really, it gets to me, you know, in my heart when I think about it, how many people have supported me and my family over the years, and how many people support the mission of the church over the years. It is a beautiful blessing. It's like that St. Francis quote. It is in giving that we receive. We do receive something in that. And I don't want people to forget that and to be challenged by that.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. I really like that interpretation of Tobit, whatever it was, 4:12 or something like that, that almsgiving delivers one from death and prevents you from going into the shadow. Like that. Almsgiving does bring it out into the light. These things I hadn't thought of going into the shadow as like, you know, the desire to conceal things that we don't want to lose, right? That's part of the way idols have a hold on our heart, is we can hide them and keep them in the darkness because we know that they shouldn't be there, but we know if we acknowledge them that we'll have to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've never thought about that verse in this way.
Yeah.
It brings it out into the light.
So we want to encourage people to do that. Before we wrap up for today, I thought I wanted to toss out some cool things. Just a fun little game here for two things before we go that have to do a little bit of our favorite thing called sports. So let's go into our next sports segment, which is tell me who's going to win. I'm going to give you the top 10 power rankings for NFL and college football, and I want you to give some predictions and picks here for who do you think is going to make it to the Super Bowl? Who do you think is going to make it to the college football championship? We're both going to share our picks here, and we'll have a fun time. We're coming up here on our fantasy football draft and so much fun in the year. And so, yeah, we're excited about that. What do you want to start with, college or pros?
Let's do pros. I don't know anything about college.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. All right, here we go.
It's all changing anyway.
Like, that's true.
Does college football even exist anymore?
Oh my gosh, here we go. Power rankings for the NFL. Number one, Kansas City Chiefs. Two, Philadelphia Eagles. Three, San Francisco 49ers. This is, from Pro Football Focus, by the way. Four, Cincinnati Bengals. Five, the Buffalo Bills. Six, the New York Jets. Seven, your Dallas Cowboys. Eight, the Los Angeles Chargers. Nine, the Cleveland Browns. And 10, the Baltimore Ravens. So, Father Paul, you don't have to pick one of those 10 if you have a hot take, but who do you think is going to play in this year's Super Bowl?
Well, the obvious Cowboys are... this is their year. Finally, they've got rid of Zeke, and Tony Pollard is just, we got Deuce Vaughn or whatever his name is, like little guy who's really fast. And yeah, this,
you're killing so it.
Micah is just, he said that he wants to be one of the greatest players of all time, and like anything less is like the Hall of Fame isn't good enough, but he wants to be like at the top of the Hall of Fame.
You got Trey Lance.
Yeah, we got third string Trey Lance.
So when Dak goes down or you have to bench him, you're like, yeah, hey, we got
Cooper Rush.
Yeah, like Cooper Rush. And, exactly.
And we're like, he's getting overexposed, and let's give Trey Lance a shot. Yeah, Cowboys for sure, 100%. And since we're just dreaming big, I say the Jets, Cowboys, Jets.
Mm.
Super Bowl.
Have
and
you
Aaron
watched?
Aaron Rodgers dismantles the Cowboys, and it just like it sends us all into PTSD. And
I was gonna say, what was that? I mean, I know there's been several times, but what was that time? I think you were at my house, or maybe it was Father Michael Bainham. It was that drive, you know, where like that sideline catch in the playoffs. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And just tore the hearts out of everybody. But that's what Aaron Rodgers loves
every
to do.
Game. Every game, yeah, it's just Cowboys.
I'm not gonna lie. Okay, so we had like a free, I don't know, month or 2 month preview of like HBO Max on the TV, and so I've been watching Hard Knocks the season on the Jets.
Oh yeah, it's on the Jets.
Okay, before I'd be like Aaron Rodgers, what a jerk. Now watching it, I'm like, dude, I would love if he's my teammate. He's just such a cool, like the pendulum has swung fully to the other side. I'm like,
because he's playing for a New York team, and you're like,
exactly.
And you're like, so, East Coast, what's up?
I'm gonna switch it up just because I am not gonna pick the same thing as you. Although I do think the Jets actually do have a good chance, but I'm gonna go with the Eagles and the Chargers. Eagles and the Chargers for the Super Bowl. But I think, you know, I think Bengals, Bills, all those normal players have a usual chance at it. Considering that you know nothing about college football, I'm just going to tell you this. Georgia's the best team in the country. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know that,
right?
So, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, USC, Florida State, Penn State, Clemson, and UT. You think any of those are going to make it to the college football championship?
I mean, last time I checked, Georgia was super dominant, and they had a lot of players that went to the NFL, but they're still super dominant. I don't know. I haven't paid any attention, but I guess let's say Georgia, and then since I have UT allegiances, throw UT up there and say they...
You have UT allegiances?
Yeah, a lot of my family went to UT.
My parents. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, my parents met there.
Whoa, all these things I'm starting to learn for the first time.
The UT alumni, got family members.
Wow. You always get along so well with all the Aggies, and now I'm surprised to hear that this is just...
Surrounded, it's force of necessity.
Force.
Also, yeah. Like, I grew up in kind of neutral ground.
I might have forgot number five, LSU, but yeah, I think it's going to be the normal people. Unfortunately, that's the tough part about college, like
the Georgias and the Alabamas,
the Georgia, Ohio State, Alabamas. I mean, I would love to say my beloved Notre Dame has a shot, but they probably don't. But actually, USC, I think, has kind of made a flip now. But I mean, like you said, college football, what is going on here?
What about Colorado? What about Deion?
Dude,
is he ready or is he...
No, I saw a response. I saw an article on ESPN about Deion in this. You know, they're only still predicted with him and the change for 2.5 wins.
Really?
With the change, 2.5 wins.
The whole team.
They gutted the whole team, but like, I think they're saying like, yeah, but you're also now playing like all, like they opened the year against TCU.
You mean the division.
Yeah. Strength of schedule, like all of that, you know, like I think when they looked at it, they were like, I mean, what do you think about just like the whole idea and like him being like Coach Prime and all of this? Like, I don't know. Does it not rub you the wrong way?
Oh, I think it's awesome. He's wearing that cowboy hat. Oh. He's up there. It's like,
yeah, like what is he doing with the cowboy hat? You know, this is their schedule. Listen to this. TCU, they play Nebraska, Colorado State, Oregon, USC, Arizona State, Stanford, UCLA, Oregon State, Arizona, Washington State, and Utah. And of those, Utah, Oregon State, UCLA, USC, Oregon and TCU are all ranked opponents already. I mean, it would be quite the feat. I mean, if he like went 500 and made a bowl game his first year, then I'd be like, all right, Deion's the real deal. You think he's the real deal?
I
didn't say, is he fun? I said, is he the real deal?
I think it's going to take a lot to rebuild. Like he brought a lot of players over. Mm-hmm. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Like there are people who are interested now. But that's way different than having like a sort of pedigree. And I don't know.
Like a Nick Saban type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They moved from the Pac 12 to the Big 10?
No, they were in the Big 12, and I think they moved to the Pac 12. I don't know. I need to look it up.
Okay.
Do you know though, if you put $1,000 down, I did hear this the other day. If you take $1,000, speaking of tithing, this is a nice way to wrap up our episode. Take $1,000 and put it down on Colorado to win the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. It would pay out $250,000.
Hey, wanted to go halfsies?
Yeah, halfsies. That's what I was going to say. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, folks, we thank you so much for listening to The Prodigal and the Priest. Make sure to go check out our new website, prodigalandthepriest.com. You can submit a question, email us there. And like I said, be on the lookout for some of those re-releases. But on behalf of Joey Scansella and Father Paul Bechter, we want to say take care.
God bless.